Now come to order, it's the March 17th meeting. It looks like we're starting a bit late, 3:25. With us, we've got Representative Lynn, Representative T. Wilson, Representative Holmes, myself, Chair Olson. We do have a quorum to conduct business. First item on the agenda is House Bill 363, and I believe Rob Earl is going to do the first portion of the bill. Welcome, Rob. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. Thank you for waiting for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Rob Earl, staff Representative Herron. First, we'd like to thank you and the committee for hearing this bill. We feel it's very timely. HB 363 is sponsored by the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee, which is co-chaired by Representatives Herron and Munoz. But it was, we also received a lot of help from Representative Osterman's office, and Aaron's going to come up and talk a little bit later on. Mr. Chairman, the mission of ADA is to promote, develop, and advance economic growth and diversification in Alaska by providing various means of financing and investment. ADA fulfills this mission by providing Alaskan businesses with long-term commercial and development financing at a reasonable cost. ADA is a public development finance corporation that is independent of direct agency control, although it is associated with DCCED. A significant percentage, Mr. Chairman, of ADA's return on its investment, on its assets, is redistributed back to the state general fund as a dividend each year. Just this year, it was $23 million. Currently, the ADA board consists of the commissioners of revenue and DCCED, and that's by statute. They're not appointed by the governor. And a third commissioner is appointed by the governor of discretionary. It can be any one of the commissioners. Currently, it's DOT. And then there's two public members. So it's a ratio of three commissioners to two private sector members. And I should note that the ADA board is the same as the AEA board by statute, the Alaska Energy Authority, of course. HB 363, as written, restructures the board by replacing two commissioners with two more private sector members so that the board would consist of four private sector members and the commissioner of revenue. The private sector members must possess business expertise and leadership skills under this bill. There is a significant amendment that I'd like to, if we could bring up a little bit.
Yeah, we do have amendment number one, and I would entertain a motion to adopt amendment number one, and then I will object.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number one.
And I'll object for purposes of...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Speaker Chenault.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. At this time, if it would be okay if Aaron Harrington came up and talked a little bit about the bill?
Certainly.
Thank you.
Would you like to just talk a little bit about the bill?
I think I'll do that after.
Welcome, Aaron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Aaron Harrington, and I'm staff to Representative Osterman. So, Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you. Rob asked me to join today to just provide a little bit of the background of the work that we've been doing in Representative Osterman's office that has led in part to the authoring of this bill. And so beginning at the end of last session, Representative Osterman directed staff to work with staff of other offices and do a review of economic development activities in state government. We did conduct that review over the course of the interim and held hearings with the Community and Regional Affairs Committee in Anchorage in December. And at that time, members of Representative Osterman's DCCED Finance Subcommittee also were present to hear what we brought back. And one of the important things that we learned during the course of that research is that many states that are recognized as having successful economic development efforts and moving toward having successful economic development efforts, an important step that they took was to bring more private sector input into the activities of state government that related to economic development. And so based on the review that we conducted, ongoing conversations, the CNRA hearing in December, and then ongoing conversations with the administration, we were able to work with Representative Herron and Representative Munoz to develop this concept to try to integrate that public or that private sector input. And so we just thought that to provide a little bit of that background to the genesis of this idea and some of the research that was supporting it might be helpful to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could briefly talk about the amendment.
Certainly.
The amendment, it'll be create a board consisting of five public members and the commissioners of revenue and DCCED. We thought it was important to bring back on the original bill took DCCED commissioner off, and we kind of realized that was a mistake for various reasons because of his perspective and knowledge in statewide economic development and his expertise in rural areas. And this expands it to a seven-member board with the amendment. One reason for that is that ADA can then have subcommittees, which is hard to do with a five-member board, and they've expressed a desire for that. And it also gives a broader pool of experience for the governor to appoint from. And at that time, we could stand open for questions as you like.
Before we get too far into it, I'm going to lift my objection to the amendment. Is there any further objection? Amendment number one's not. Questions? Representative Wilson, followed by Representative Holmes.
Thank you. On this board, had you thought about making some of these regional so you would have people from all over the state versus possibly one area?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, excellent question. I like where you're thinking. We kind of considered that, but we didn't really want to broach that at this time. But we think ADA could be a little more involved in rural areas, and so we would certainly entertain that suggestion. We're open to that for sure.
And follow-up?
Follow-up.
And I like the idea more of the private sector. Do you think that might bring an issue of conflict of interest depending upon, you know, what their private business is in the outside world?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, there's already two public members on the board, and I believe they follow Robert's Rules of Order and have to disclose conflicts of interest, and the board votes whether they have a conflict or not. But that's a very good question because I think it is a concern, and hopefully the governor will be keeping an eye on that as well.
Okay, thank you.
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Newman, so we almost have a full committee. Representative Holmes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Given that the board, I believe, is ADA, and it also serves as the board for Alaska Energy Authority, is that correct? Yes.
Yes, it is.
The language that would apply to the public members is that they have expertise in private sector business and possess demonstrated leadership skills, which sounds pretty good and broad. Is that broad enough also to encompass the types of people that you might want for diversity? I saw in some of Ada's comments here that they'd be interested in maybe having some more people with energy backgrounds on the board. Is this broad enough to encompass all the types of people that we might want on for the Energy Authority?
Through the chair, Representative Holmes, we believe it is broad enough, but we do like that question because we would hope a governor would have the discretion and the wisdom to put someone on there with energy experience, especially with the seven-member board. But we don't spell it out, and we're open to that idea as well.
And Mr. Chairman, if I would that be able to include? I assume that would also include things, co-ops, people who were maybe their experience was instead of in maybe a private corporation would include energy co-ops or other types of energy. Or maybe even if some of their experience had been maybe in local government working with energy. I'm just trying to think of the types of people we might want to have represented on this board.
Through the chair, Representative Holmes, it's not our intent to exclude those.
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by one of the co-sponsors of the bill, Representative Herron, is in the audience. And would you care to make any comments? Nope. Available for questions?
No, sir. Staff is up to the task.
Any further questions?
No.
Do we have anybody in the Representative Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just want to make sure I'm clear on this. We're this brings together the ADA and also the Alaska Energy Authority?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, by statute, the ADA board is the AA board as well. And as a side note, they had a board meeting this morning. ADA and AEA follows their meeting.
Yeah.
Follow up.
We're looking at a lot of different projects that AEA has proposed for renewable energy projects and such. How much does the board get involved in those discussions?
To the chair, Representative Newman, I might have to defer to Ted Leonard on this question. I don't believe they have direct control over that. I think they could help with financing for the projects if that was needed.
Ted, are you on the line?
Okay.
I am online, Chair.
Please state your name and affiliation, and did you hear Representative Newman's question?
Yes, this is Ted Leonard with the Alaska Industrial Development and Export Authority. I'm the Executive Director. I did not quite hear Representative Newman's question.
Representative Newman.
Okay, thanks, Ted. Representative Newman here. Mark. Ted, how in-depth does the ADA or AEA board membership get into when we're looking at some of the projects up to $550 million total on renewable energy projects around the state? Do you review those projects at all, or how in-depth do you get into those discussions?
Through the chair to Representative Newman, ADA has not been involved in the going through and doing analysis on the projects that AEA has been working on so far. They've been going through their own contract economic advisors on, for example, the alternative energy programs. So I can't really tell you the whole process that AEA goes through and how their board, when the board, ADA's board is the AEA's board, how much they're involved in that. I'd really have to get Steve Haggison to testify on that, and he could be available anytime or answer those questions. ADA can be involved, as Rob stated, in the process of financing energy projects, and currently we're looking with AEA of how we can partner together on type of those projects. As a matter of fact, ADA personnel and AEA personnel are meeting right now with officials from the Department of Energy on looking at how we can utilize their stimulus guarantee programs to fund energy projects in the state, alternative energy projects.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to follow up on that, Ted, then, or the sponsors, I guess. When we're looking at this, and because it's going to consist of four private sector members with expertise, I would imagine that you would look for people with expertise in power generation or different types of work like that. That's a big issue for Alaska. And how would you deal with conflicts on that if you've got a five-member board, you know, and $500 million worth of money out there available for projects? How do you deal with that issue?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, with the amendment, it would be there would be five public members and two commissioners. You missed that part, sorry. The conflict of interest question, I think it's the board follows Robert's Rules of Order, and they would have to declare a conflict, and then I believe the board would vote whether the person has a conflict or not. And as for the expertise on the board, that's sort of left to the governor's discretion. We don't make a particular requirement that there be an energy expert on the board, but that idea we are open to.
So this would be involved in the same process as any of the other boards and commissions as far as the governor's staff screening them and putting the names forward.
To the chair, they're not subject to legislative approval, this board.
Pardon me?
They're not subject to legislative approval.
Okay, so they're...
They're just appointed by the governor.
Yep.
To the chair, this is Ted. I could add something to what Representative Newman was asking.
Sure, Ted.
One is that, of course, our board does have to follow the Ethics Act for boards and commissions where they, like Rob was saying, would have to identify if they have a conflict of interest. And having a larger board would make it easier to vote on those type of issues. And also, one of the things that was just talked about that maybe could help, and I'm not sure, is that where you say needs business experience, that you could say business and industry experience. As we were looking and answering the questions to Representative Heron's office, we were looking at different sectors, and that's what we identified as industry expertise, and the sectors included natural resource extraction, logistics, energy, communications. So I'm wondering if industry was added into that, it would give the intent of the legislature to include more broad range than just what you would think of with business expertise.
This would be page 1, line 12, after private sector business and industry and possess demonstrated leadership skills?
Something like that, yes, Chair.
And or? And or. I believe Representative Holmes may have conceptual amendment 2.
Are you ready for, conceptual amendment?
This would be amendment number 2.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move conceptual amendment number 2 on page 1, line 12. After the word business, insert the words and/or industry.
Object, just so you can explain it.
And, Mr. Chairman, that's basically Mr. Leonard's amendment. The reason I suggest using and or, it's so that they don't have to have business and industry experience. It could be that they could have business and industry or business or industry. I think the point is to try to make sure that we have people in the energy industry and others that may not be technically private business.
Representative Newman, is that what you were looking for?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if that's what I was looking for, but it's looking better. So I certainly think it's a good idea.
Is there any further discussion on Amendment 2? Representative Wilson?
I remove my objection.
Is there any further objection to Amendment number 2? It passes. Question. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess to the sponsors, is there financial disclosures that are required under this for members of this board?
Through the Chair, Representative Newman, yes. Board members have to disclose their financial assets.
Public financial disclosures?
Sorry, yes, sir. Mr. Chair.
The public financial disclosures are available on this?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
I guess I'm going to go back to the, and it's up to the maker. I look at the board right now, and it says that are the five, and I know there's more commissioners and public members, but right now, Juneau, Petersburg, and Anchorage are the only three communities that are board members, and I think it's important not just for rural but interior. The more diverse that we can get, the better. But I don't want to make the pool too small either. So I guess I'm just looking for feedback whether or not we want to see if that just happens that way automatically, or whether it's something we ought to put in there. Maybe ask the maker how you feel.
Through the Chair, Representative Wilson, it would just be up to the governor on who he appointed, but. We certainly wouldn't mind there being greater direction in that way.
So I'd like to put in a conceptual amendment.
Number three is
I would like to see it's just split regional. I don't know exactly how to put maybe one rural, one interior, you know, and then maybe the southern part. I don't know. stay though. This is really conceptual. I think it's, I guess it's, I think it's just worth a try to see how it works if the governor comes back and says, I can't, it makes it too hard to find people. I don't think that'll happen. I think what you'll end up with is a better diverse group of people meeting together representing, hopefully, the entire state and their needs. And that's what I'd like to see.
You know, what we can also do is put a letter of intent along with it, but I think it's the, I think it's already the intent of both Ada and the governor and the co-sponsors for it to be in that direction. If you look at the makeup of the co-sponsors, we've got South Central, South Central, and we've got Western Alaska amongst the sponsors of the bill.
I think especially when it's tied into energy. I mean, right now, energy in itself is just so diverse, too, what we have available in each of our communities. But it either way, it doesn't matter.
So you're making an amendment? Or
yeah, I'll make it to see what happens with it.
Well, a chance to make some law.
Does anybody want to object? How are we going to do it?
Yeah. You going to restate that in a form we can use?
Okay. Maybe I'll work with the sponsors of it and see if it works out that way. And if they want to move forward, they can. Because I don't think I could just sit here and try to split the state up into five areas without making a big mess. And that's not my intent. So if we could just talk about it and see if that would work out well. If not, you know, we can hope it happens.
I'd like the record to reflect we've been joined by Representative Book, so we do have a full committee. And Aaron, did you have a comment?
Mr. Chairman, I'm just thinking to perhaps address Representative Wilson's concerns. I think that one way that I have seen in statute the issue of trying to address a rural member before is to have communities, I believe, of less than 2,500 people or located off the road system as one way to define a rural member, and then to define an interior community that I'm less familiar with, not being from an interior district.
I'm not going to try this, so I'll just...
Have you withdrawn your amendment?
I'll withdraw it, yes.
But we can work on some
to see if that
your language necessary. That will follow the bill. Representative Book, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My pleasure. I did have confidence with the two representatives here today and talked about a couple of my concerns, and one of them was that the makeup of the committee be comprised of a cross-section of interests regarding business, so that there be small businesses represented as well as industry, composition and also the structure of the replacements thereof, that they have overlapping tenure, so that there would be an availability for continuity and consistency as well.
What are you still trying to figure our states?
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, I guess, for committee discussion. Or Aaron, in section one where it talks about the membership and the membership of the authority consists of, if there was to add a line four in there, you know, it is the intent of the legislature that the membership be show a diverse section of this or sections of the state, you know, somewhere along those lines. I think that maybe might get to our representative Wilson is trying to get to. But that's because it falls under section one where it talks about membership. And I think it's probably, that's a good idea, I think, myself, is support the concept.
You know, we can hold the bill over and have you and
I think she can work with the sponsors. Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I'm very, very confident that Representative Wilson can work with the sponsors. I think the sponsors recognize the intent and maybe feel or they're shaking their heads at that it probably might be a good deal or a good option to put in there, and I trust them to continue to working on that as far as I'm concerned.
I couldn't tell if Representative Wilson was raising her hand or shaking her fist at me.
No.
Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Yeah, just to put it on the table, just to think about it, and we'll do a little further research, but a concept of the judicial districts, there's five, and that would still leave another one open for the public, possibly a good way of splitting up the state. But we'll get some maps out and look at it together and see how that works. And I appreciate that we were all thinking the same, so that was good. Thank you.
Any further questions before we open it up to public testimony? Thanks again. With that, is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none, is there anybody online? Hearing none, we'll close it out to public testimony at this time, and we're going to carry the bill over to work out the geographical division of the membership. And with that, we'll bring up the second item on the calendar, which is House Bill 412, Microloan Program. Looks like Tyson's up. Tyson and Kathy Jeans.
Is this the only committee it goes to, right?
Yeah. Welcome back.
Oh, hi, welcome.
Please state your name and affiliations for the record, and...
My name is Kathy Jeans. I'm the Systems Branch Manager for Division of Investments.
Tyson Fick, Legislative Liaison, Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development.
First time we've seen you this year, Tyson. Undoubtedly not the last. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I want to start off by thanking you for hearing the bill. We believe the legislation will greatly benefit Alaska's small businesses, which in turn will strengthen our economy. Just to give you some quick background information, our agency administers a number of state loan programs, and we've been doing this type of work for many decades. House Bill 412 would create a new loan program aimed at helping Alaskan small businesses have access to critically needed capital to help them start or grow their business. The legislation is modeled after a similar program currently operated through the Small Business Administration. That program is available in 46 other states. However, it's not available in Alaska. The reason being the program is not available is that an intermediary lender is required, and as to date, no one has stepped forward that would meet Small Business Administration's qualifications. In terms of the program, loans can be made up to $35,000 for an individual and up to $70,000 for two or more individuals that are Alaskan residents. Loan proceeds can be used for working capital, equipment, construction, or other commercial purposes. The maximum term would be 6 years, and the loans would be fully collateralized. Interest rate would be based on the prime rate plus one percentage point, with a floor of 6% and a ceiling of 8%. In terms of capitalization, we submitted a fiscal note that includes $3.5 million that would come from ADA, contingent on the passage of legislation to sell the Alaska Energy Authority's Power Project Fund loan portfolio. We have also included operating expenses of $77,700 to cover the cost of hiring a loan collection officer, and to cover startup expenses and a small amount of travel. We worked really, really hard to keep this fiscal note as low as possible due to the startup of the fund. The fund would be set up as a revolving loan fund so that after the initial capitalization, all operating expenses as well as loan requests would be paid from earnings of the fund. We're projecting about 75 loans in the first year, 100 loans in the second, and about 25 loans each year after, so the fund would be fully revolving at that point. So that's just a quick overview. The administration strongly supports this legislation. We feel this type of financing mechanism is needed and will help many businesses succeed in Alaska. It's extremely important concept to our healthy Alaskan economy. Sorry, nervous. This concludes my testimony, Mr. Chairman. And I'll be happy to answer any questions you or the committee members may have.
Who wants to walk us through the sectional?
Oops.
First question, I guess.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. My apologies. Section 1 modifies the Unified Code of the State of Alaska to describe findings related to the fund. Section 2 creates a new article in AS 44.33 titled Alaska Microloan Revolving Fund. It establishes the fund as a revolving fund and describes the various components of the fund. Through the chair, yes,
Newman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kathy, when we talk about revolving funds, can you describe a revolving fund? Is there different types of funds that you have set up that you currently work with, and what are they, and what's a revolving fund?
Okay, through the chair to Representative Newman. A revolving fund is not a dedicated fund. A dedicated fund would have general fund. And so this a revolving fund, the repayments as they come back, the principal and interest portion of the payments are retained in the fund, and so is the Trifonsi earnings. And any other types of fees that we collect retain in the fund, and then we can just pay our operating expenses directly from the earnings.
Follow up?
Thank you. Then operating expenses would be if somebody gets if Olson Real Estate Services, an insurance company, comes and gets a loan to start a business, and for one reason or another defaults and can't make their payments, do you have regular foreclosure procedures that you go through and how that's done, and any assets that belong to that company they go through, I imagine, get liquidated, all that money goes right back into this fund, this revolving fund, and not into the general fund?
Through the chair to Representative Newman, yes, we have a special fund that's called a foreclosure expense fund. And so any monies that are credited against that account can be used to buy out liens to protect the state assets. When you go through foreclosure proceedings, you sometimes have to contact the AG's office for legal expenses. Sometimes you have to hire a management company to go out and view the property. You have to repossess collateral, bankruptcy, settlements, things of that nature.
Follow up?
Just on that point, then, Kathy, I just want to make sure that all that money just kind of stays within itself, then. It doesn't go back to the general fund, reappropriating and all that. This is all kind of a self-contained unit here, then.
Through the chair, to Representative Newman, yes, it does stay in the fund. Now, operating expenses, like for salaries and, other, like, office equipment, you that will be an appropriation out of the fund, but it's off the earnings that are retained in the fund.
Okay.
No question.
On that point, then, so when next year when we're going through the budget and it has new employees, and legislators always like to pinpoint that one, then that there'll be an explanation in there that says that this employee is funded out of the revolving fund itself?
Through the chair to Representative Newman, yes, it would say that one of our funding sources would be that particular loan fund for that particular position.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please continue.
Okay. My apologies to the committee. Section 2 also sets out limitations on the loans. Loans can be made up to $35,000 per person, up to $70,000 to two more people. The loan term may not exceed 6 years and may not bear an interest exceeding the prime rate plus one percentage point. However, it may not be less than 6% per year and not more than 8% per year. The loan must be secured by collateral that's acceptable to the permission of our department and may not be made to a person who has past due child support obligations. And then also establishes a special account, which we had discussed, called the foreclosure expense account. Section 3 of the bill amends the Unified Code law of the state of Alaska by adding a new section titled Transition for Regulations. This will authorize our department to proceed with the adoption of regulations necessary to implement the changes made in Section 2. It further stipulates that the regulations may not take effect before July 1st, 2010. Section 4 stipulates that Section 3 of this Act takes effect immediately. Section 5 states that, except as provided in Section 4 of this Act, the Act takes effect on July 1st, 2010.
Representative Booth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Under Section 2, the paragraph addressing 4433965. You have encapsulated the requirements, and yet you've also set the prime as the indicator. What happens when the prime's at 4? And you're saying you can no longer go no more than one percentage point above that. But you have between 6 and 8 as your parameters. I'm just curious how that's adjusted.
Well, and through the chair to Representative Boop, it can be prime plus 1. Like, for example, the prime is 3.25 right now. Mm-hmm. So that would put the loans at 4.25. But we have a floor that it has to be, can't go below 6%. So with the prime, you know, varying, you know, throughout the years, a few years ago it was around 7%, so then it would have been 8, and that would be the max that we would allow. So we want to keep it between 6 and 8%, because these loans might be a little bit riskier, and so we're just trying not to, you know, get down too low and go into direct competition with the banks.
If I might defer to the chair's experience, is this, in your experience, sort of the usual and traditional mechanism by which you've seen these kinds of things occur in the past?
Actually, the only thing I can think of would be CFAB, and I think they did have a preferential interest built into CFAB, but there were certain parameters that the fishermen had to meet. But and again, I think that was used for vessels, gears, and permits. But it was a preferential interest rate.
Right. So if I might, Mr. Chair, that would sort of remove the opportunity for, you know, such as we have current conditions. So I guess it would just be another choice that somebody else would have and go into a standard offering of a different loan guarantee. So,
but I do believe ADA is not laying off a portion of these loans. I think they're keeping 100% of them, because they're relatively small.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you. Underneath the same section, where the loan must be secured by the collateral, but may not be made to a person who has past due child support obligations, why not, if they have any kind of judgments against, why only child support?
Through the chair to Representative Wilson, we do, when they fill out a loan application with us, we'll look at their credit and do a credit check. So that would come into play if there was judgments or bankruptcies or other things that showed up on their credit report. So we do submit credit reports once a month to Experian. And so if something was out there, you know, you can go to Experian, Equifax, and sorry, I think it's TransUnion is the third company. So that would show up if they have a judgment against them or other debt that's in default.
Follow up?
Is that
true? So does child support not show up? Is that why you list it separately?
I'm sorry, we have a program manager in the division. I'm not 100% sure about that. Excuse me, Chair.
I think the answer might be in the back of the room.
Well, I might add, we have Ted Leonard still online if anybody has any questions.
Through the chair on that point.
Representative Booth.
My esteemed colleague from North Pole, sometimes language like this, and I've seen it since I've gotten here, is put in with specific direction of the legislature, and it's imperative that this be on record and in statute to express a point of view. So I'm not sure if this one is one of those cases, but I have seen where there has been specific direction given that this has to be caretaken for. And I could see where this language would be put in there.
I have a feeling we may have some clarification right here. Please state your name and affiliation for the record. And
for the record, Jeff Whistler. I'm the lending manager for the Division of Investments. Representative Wilson, Representative Book, the chair. Actually, you're really both correct in what you just said. It's part of what you say, and it's also because those things aren't reported on credit reports. So it's a cooperation issue with the Department of Revenue, child support. It's really not good to give someone a benefit like a state loan like this if they're behind. It's not that they don't have the obligations. We're only looking at past due obligations. So if they're behind on payments, you got to bring it current, then we can look at all those other things. Now, as a matter of regular credit decisions, we have to look at those for granting the loan. So all those other, the judgments, any liens, past due payments, those are other regular credit decisions that we'd be making in respects to doing the actual loan. This is just something to be peremptory. We don't even do that loan if it has that. That's an automatic.
Follow-up, sir, since we got him up here. Are there any other obligations that would fall, that would not be on a credit report that we should be taking into consideration?
Representative Wilson, through the chair. There's possibly, because the IRS, Department of Treasury, has some certain rights the way they file liens. They literally can take this piece of paper and say it's a lien and walk over and put it in the file cabinet, and it's automatically a lien, whether it's recorded or not. They have that right based on the date that they do it. So possibly, but we usually check with those as a matter of record on all of our loans. We get a release, and we send it out to the IRS as a memorandum of understanding. They respond back within 5 business days and tell us if they're current on their filings and if they have any past due obligations. So again, it's a credit decision then.
Thank you.
Representative Book, followed by Representative Newman. Answered your questions?
Yes. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kathy, so when I look at this and when we look at, I'm reading a sectional analysis in the 5th paragraph down under 9955, and it talks about the department to make loans for working capital equipment, construction, and commercial purposes. So if a person applied to, was a mechanic, I'll just try and pick that one, a snow machine mechanic, small engine. So they could get a loan to purchase a building or construct a building on their property or purchase property. Just how far can you get into that for a loan if you have to have a place to operate? And if you can get up to $70,000 on this at 6%, that, you know, that's better than what you get from the bank. And but you could use that, I would assume, to purchase some property if you found some property that would work good, a garage that you could get into and start your business. Is that allowable?
Through the chair to Representative Newman. Yes, you know, when it says down here other types of commercial businesses, I think that if you wanted to purchase a garage and possibly purchase equipment for that, and then if that for like startup and expansion of your business, is that?
Follow up?
Correct. That's correct, Mr. Chair. That's where I'm going on that. And then because you have to have established collateral, would you, you know, lay something out where a 20% investment or a certain percentage of amount of personal collateral or personal money put down with matching from ADA on that?
Through the chair to Representative Newman, we wouldn't need anything really matching from ADA, but it is encouraged under this bill that the borrower have some working capital to put into the business, and we can also lend working capital also to help them start up their business.
Just a couple follow-ups. Yeah, and I mentioned that because it says must be secured, you know, when I talk about it, must be secured by collateral accepted by the commissioner. But we don't have limits on that. That must, you know, is there a certain percentage of how you can get into that? I guess that's just, which is good. I think it's good that you have the flexibility, quite frankly, but I just want to make sure that's what we're talking about, the ability to do that.
Yeah, Representative Newman, through the chair. Each item has a different collateral value, what you look at in the industry, whether it be, you know, if it might be your equipment or tools for your snow machine stuff, that might have a value roughly of about 50% of what the purchase price or replacement might be, and the reason has to do with, you know, marketability and resale of those things is a collateral aspect. Real estate goes up generally to 80%. Riverboat, maybe you want to put your recreational watercraft up, you know, that might be between 65% and 70%. So that's kind of the security side of things. The other part you're talking about is the equity. I think the standard equity, I think, is about 10% that you might have already in the business. So you have some buy-in into the business.
Oh, good.
Follow up?
Just follow up. So you'd have like approximately 20% in equity in personal property equipment, as you said, that you could have, and that would satisfy the requirements to possibly get a loan up to how much money?
Mr. Chairman, or Representative Newman through the chair. it's hard to say. It depends on what you're really buying there. I mean, if your example would be for buying your property as a business for repairing snow machines is your example, you might have 20% down, or you might have other collateral. You might have a house that you own free and clear, or equity in a house that you might put up to buy that piece of property. So it's,
I guess, I mean, so all those are determined individually on the loan applicant as they're received as to whether it's a, you've got the proper collateral then?
Absolutely.
Okay. A couple more follow-ups.
A couple more.
Thank you. I'm on a roll. Well, I remember going through all the paperwork I had to do, you know, to a loan similar, the same requirements as SBA, and it's pretty stringent. And so you look at that, and do you look at, when you're approving a loan, of whether the need in the community is that? You know, because when you start a business, you have to find a niche. You know, how many widgets can you sell? I mean, how do you analyze that? That's just all your determination as a loan officer, I guess.
Representative Newman, through the chair. Yeah, you're kind of, some of it's a little knowledge of being there. You go out and you look at it. You talk to people. We talk to the ARTRs. There's several resource groups out there, small business development centers, university centers, LIOs. There's a lot of people in those regions, city offices. If you don't know, we're going to have to go out and find out what you're doing. I mean, if you're making baskets in Big Lake, we have to find out, is there really a market for baskets of what you're doing? And we have to look at that profit and loss as part of your application. Is it really reasonable? And then we assign values or percentages based on the reasonableness of your business plan and your expectations of marketing over the next 3 years to right. see if it really cash flows. Because we're not going to want to approve a loan for you that we can see is going to be a failure.
So then you'll set up some type of a risk assessment strategy that you base it on, and that could be regional, I guess. I just want to make sure you've got the flexibility to understand what's going on in the communities and do what you need to do. I think it's a great idea. You know, I've been trying to get something like this done for years myself. With that said, one more question. If I was opening up a place that fixed refrigeration type equipment, and I had a student loan for refrigeration and heating that I'm paying 11% on, would I be able to purchase, you know, to take money out through this loan, pay off that other student fund loan? Can you do that? Because it's the educational requirements that you have to do the job. And that's stated in here that through training that you can receive that. Because I know a particular guy that happened to.
Representative Newman, through the chair, that would be a refinance in order to do that by definition. So, I mean, you would use working capital loans to pay off certain debts, maybe credit cards you used for buying inventory, but to use loan proceeds to pay off other obligations would be a refinance. And I don't think that's proposed as an eligible purpose under this presently.
So then if you had equipment that you still, if I went to Sears and bought some good Delta equipment and I still owed some money on it for a wood shop and I had some saws there and I still owed some money on it, then I guess you probably just, as on clarification, you couldn't use that as collateral, or could you still get money towards that? I mean, how do you know how that money's spent anyhow, because it's going for equipment and things like that? Is pretty broad in there, and it should be, I think. But how do you make sure that it's going to where you need to be, I guess?
Representative Newman, through the chair. When we do these kind of loans, and we do these type of things now through our Small Business Economic Development Rural Development Initiative Fund, we even do it through our Commercial Fishing Loan Fund, these types of things. And we do that by a line of communication that we have with you as a borrower once you've been approved. Conceptually or on paper, basically a commitment of how the funds are going to be used, where they're going to go, going to eligible purposes. And we control, what we do is we control those disbursements. We don't just write you a check and assume that you would be going out and just putting it towards this. If it was for purchasing or paying down or paying off your equipment needs that you need to run your business, it would be to you, and it might be to Sears, you know, or wherever it is that you're getting those equipment, and you would give us an invoice or a quote list from them that lists out what it is you're buying and how much they are, so we know really what we're paying, so we wouldn't have, you know, money going to you for putting your bank or arbitrage, and so, that kind of thing. We want to make sure it's going for an eligible purpose.
And so you could pay like 10% of that cost and then use this loan to help guarantee the rest of it then for equipment. Fantastic.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further questions? Thanks a lot.
Can I ask everybody's question?
Yeah, you got all of ours. We have one person online that wants to testify, but before that, is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none, Mike and Matsu. Mike Bergforg, are you with us?
Yes.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and thank you for being patient.
Thank you. My name is Mike Borgford. I'm the executive director of the Maiden Matsu Association. And our members and our affiliates would like to emphasize to the committee that we look at this as probably the most important piece of legislation to come through for small business here in Alaska in the last 30 years. Right now, our small businesses, you folks have been talking about startup businesses. All of our members and our affiliates are all existing businesses. And what they were looking at running through the bill is that this bill offers some opportunity to allow them to expand and to also become more viable in the marketplace. Over the last couple of weeks, we've surveyed about 250 small businesses, mostly manufacturers here in the Matsu region and across South Central. And the biggest issue they came up with this bill was it was going to allow them to bring in, it's going to allow them to get their raw materials in better volumes and, of course, get better deals by buying larger volumes, which allows them to be more competitive in the market that we have here in the Matsu and the Palmer, Wasilla, Big Lake, Houston area. And, of course, to be more marketable in the city, in Anchorage. Can't emphasize how much the guys believe that this is a really important bill. They did have one question on the eligibility section, though, which came up last night, and something that probably should be addressed, that the business itself must be located in Alaska. We had a member last night who owns a business here, but who also owns a business in the lower 48. And the way this reads under eligibility, he could borrow money for a business that does not do business in Alaska or exists in Alaska. So that may be an important point to take a look at. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mike. Any questions for Mike, Representative Newman?
Yeah, thank Mike. Representative Newman here, and for all the work that you do, you know, and then along with the work that they also do with the Matsu Small Business Economic Development Association and those groups too, to help expand the knowledge and training that they do for how to write a business plan, how to get loans, how to do your taxes, and all the things that you do in a cooperative effort in the community. So thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mark.
Is there anybody else online that would care to testify? I'm going to be keeping public testimony open. We're working on a CS, and we should have it done shortly. And I'm going to keep the public testimony open because there may be some additional questions at the next meeting or as soon as we can get the CS back to the committee. And with that, I think we'll adjourn at 4:20. And thanks again.
Thank you.